welcome to MarkBite. I'm Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor of ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog.
You join us as August moves into September. What an August it's been. Microsoft's peppered us with discounts on Windows 7, designed to prime the pump on pre-orders of the operating system. It tried to fire up viral enthusiasm for Bing with a really annoying video. And it released a community technology preview of SQL Server 2008, R2 that is. Oh, and let's not forget, it managed to offend a lot of people with some really crappy Photoshop editing when Microsoft Poland tried to digitally edit its website. But three things stand out above anything else this August. First was the no-show of the web version of Office web apps. The next was Microsoft's attempt to reach out to iPhone developers on mobile. And then the third important thing this month was the patent lawsuit that had been bubbling along underneath the surface in the Eastern District of Texas, and which now threatens to stop all shipments of Word. So, this show, as we sign off in August and jump into September, we ask, what does an online version of Office mean for Microsoft and its partners? And we find out whether the delay in August was a technical issue or a political issue. Windows 7 Mobile, supposed to bring Windows Mobile level to the iPhone, but now it looks like Microsoft's going to be shipping an update to Windows Mobile 6.5. What could have gone wrong for a company that a year ago was crowing about market share gains against BlackBerry and others, and 2 years ago the CEO was actually laughing at the idea of the iPhone? And then finally, when lawyers start throwing around words like irreparable harm and major public disruption, you got to worry. Or should you? The judge in Texas ruled that Microsoft violated an XML patent in Word, and Microsoft can no longer ship Word. What does this mean for Microsoft's $14 billion Office business, or is this just patents as usual? We'll find out as Microsoft begins its appeal this month. So, MJ, Office web apps, what the hell happened?
That's a good way to start it. What did happen? I'm actually very curious what happened. I ended up calling Microsoft at the end of August because I was thinking, you know, it was a few months ago, but they told me that Office web apps, the technical preview of those, was going to be available in August.
Yep.
So when I contacted them, I get back an interesting response. I get back a response from a spokesperson saying, well, we just said tentatively in August. We never said August. The truth is, they did say August, and it was Microsoft's own self-imposed deadline that was the August deadline.
Yeah.
So, as you said, you know, what really is going on there? Are they having a technical issue getting these out? Is it more of a political issue? Because it, you know, a lot of people are considering Office web apps to be a direct competitor to Office 2010. Mm-hmm. Even though Microsoft keeps saying no, those two things are not going to compete. One is going to be accretive. The word of the FAM this year, the financial analyst meeting, was accretive.
Oh, I hate that word, accretive.
I had to look it up, actually. I was like, accretive. but that means complimentary for any other listeners who didn't know.
It sounds like a form of creeping illness or some kind
of
horror.
So I'm tending to think they're having a problem getting everything to work as they want it to work. And I think the key here, though no one will say what actually is going on or not going on, is there's something to do with SharePoint. That's my guess, because a lot of people who've heard about the Office web apps don't realize that the back end of Office web apps is SharePoint. And it's SharePoint 2010, and SharePoint 2010 right now is in a technical preview as well. But there has to be some pieces of SharePoint, I'm thinking, especially maybe SharePoint Online, the Microsoft-hosted version, that need to be updated or tweaked in some way or made more multi-tenant. I don't really know, but I'm guessing that that's what's going on in the background and why we haven't yet seen the promised Office web apps technical preview. You know, the other part I'm finding kind of interesting is, so they haven't said that Office web apps is going to lag the rest of Office 2010. And from the Worldwide Partner Conference, we heard that Microsoft's trying to get Office 2010 out in May, June 2010. Mm-hmm. That's not tentative. That's their own goal, again, that they told partners. So I'm wondering if they are delaying the preview of Office web apps, will that have any longer-term implications as to when the final product will ship? But again, we don't know. They won't say, and nobody's talking.
Of come across a similar situation before. SAP, ironically enough, Microsoft was supposed to be in the running to buy a few years back. When SAP was supposed to be putting a version of its ERP apps online, the A1S suite that kept coming, and SAP could offer nothing more than slideware and PowerPoint presentations for a really long time, and it was never entirely clear which group of customers would be using A1S. I believe it's out there now, but it took a long time for SAP to get there. One wonders whether in these situations it's a matter of politics or corporate inertia. I mean, these large companies are trying to get these products and services out there, and there's a lot of moving parts to coordinate. So I wonder if they're really able to move fast enough or in a coordinated way that gets something out there in a timely fashion. I mean, we can't even say. I mean, Google came out with their web apps a few years back. We don't know how long they were cooking that.
Yeah, that could be the case too. You know, like you're saying, I mean, a team like Office is such a gigantic team with thousands of developers. And then when you have the dependencies on SharePoint and also the mix in Microsoft Online apps, I mean, they have a lot of moving parts here, like you're saying. And, you know, what they have said about Office web apps is it's going to be delivered in three versions. One is going to be free, and that's going to somehow come to users through Windows Live. And then there are going to be two other versions that are both paid. One of those is going to have something to do with Microsoft's hosting platform. The other one is going to be on-premise for certain customers who have software assurance contracts. So, you know, we know bits and pieces about it. I've even seen demos of it at the partner conference. I saw a demo of Office web apps on a guy's Windows mobile phone. So I know it exists in some form. But if they're going to get it out to thousands of testers and, you know, people are going to be really looking closely at this thing, I'd say it's the piece of Office 2010 people are most interested in and most intrigued by, and it's going to get the tires kicked most intensely out of all the pieces. I think they really want to make sure they get it right, too, and they need to.
The big strategy at Microsoft is to sell more versions of SharePoint, whether it's the hosted version of Office or the desktop version of Office. It wants more versions of SharePoint to be sold. So it's Office hosting desktop are definitely the thin of the wedge when it comes to selling the SharePoint server. The classic conundrum for a company like Microsoft is, what do you do? I mean, I think they're problem is, I'm going to go on a limb and say a hosted version of Office is going to be fairly popular. The big problem they've had over the years is getting people to move on to the latest versions of the suite because people are happy with good enough. Well, in a world of kind of online services, of Google Apps, etc., you know, people. I think there's enough people to make it a pretty good success. But the problem for Microsoft then becomes ensuring that it doesn't come too much of a success. And I think another issue for them is maybe not building the technology, it's creating the business, it's creating the product packaging and the service packaging around it that stops, say, people using the free version for all their business needs and kind of like corrals business users towards using one of the two hosted versions, either, you know, the one that comes on from Microsoft or the one that you have to run on your own premises.
Yeah, I totally agree. The whole positioning thing is really tricky for them because they want to sell it and they want to make it attractive, but they don't want to make it too attractive, right? Yeah. And I think they've got a blog, the Office 2010 Engineering blog, where they've been kind of tiptoeing around this positioning carefully, where they're saying, you know, just so you guys know, when Office Web Apps comes out, it's not going to look exactly like Office. Yeah. Like, not everything that you are used to is going to be there. And, you know, you will be able to do some light editing, but don't expect to be able to write big documents on it. So they're trying to, like, figure out how to excite people about it without exciting them too much. And that's tricky.
I think we're probably looking at Microsoft in some ways doesn't have a lot to fear because even though a lot of the impetus today in the industry is around cloud and online services, you're still going to have a lot of big companies that are not going to want to trust putting their business data, their documents, etc., into, let's call it, the cloud, even though, you know, I haven't got time for that phrase. But, like, they're not going to let their data to go off-premises and be managed by somebody like Microsoft. They're going to be happy with the app, the Office suite running on the desktop and having the data saved there. So, in some ways, that concern over privacy and security could be the saving grace, the thing that saves the Office business at the end of the day.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you know, we've seen people try to do web-based versions of Office before. Even Microsoft has tried it before. And in the past, it's always been too slow, and it was hard to sync up what you were doing on your client with what was in the cloud. Although we didn't call it the cloud at the time, right? I think we called it like terminal services or something
thin,
like that.
Thin client, I believe.
Yeah, thin client. But yeah, it was the same idea. Like, you know, where is your data? And do you want your data to be located even partially on somebody else's servers, especially if they're Microsoft servers and say you're a Microsoft competitor, perhaps, or even a partner, you know? So there are all those issues, and they're going to have to also figure out how to position that and how to make it so that people trust them with some pretty important data. So yeah, there's a lot of issues around Office web apps that is probably going to take three versions at least to iron out the old three version rule.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that, you know, I think it's a comment on where Office is these days, that the most interest in the whole Office 2000 family is the web app side, because, I mean, how far can you take a desktop productivity suite? And, you know, the last version wasn't terrifically exciting. As I said, people always hold out on upgrading because they're happy with good enough.
Yeah. I've been asking people what they're excited about in Office 2010 in the tech preview, and the answers have been kind of interesting and funny, actually. I've been getting a lot of, like, one guy was like, "I love paste preview." I was like, wow. I mean, and you know, you're right. Like, it is very incremental things that you want to change in Office at this point. I mean, Microsoft can't change too much of it either, because people will scream, as we saw with the ribbon.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the time they do make a really pretty sweeping change to it, of course, there's some people who like it and have found it to be productive. And there's just as many, if not more, very vociferous users who hate the ribbon.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to make Office 2010 even more ribbonized than Office 2007, and they're going to make sure every app in it has the ribbon. So for some people, that's going to be a positive, and for others, it's going to be like, no way am I upgrading to that version.
Well, I saw two Microsoft employees put a website up asking to canvassing votes on what people wanted to remove from the suite, and the ribbon was the most consistently voted feature that people wanted to see removed.
Yep, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. You mentioned the Office web apps, seeing it on mobile. Let's look back a little bit. Windows Mobile 7.0, you've been following that pretty closely, and there was an explosive little story came out of Taiwan during the month of August on Microsoft's mobile strategy. DigiTimes reported that Microsoft was going to, I believe, there'd be an interim version of Windows 6, Mobile 6.5, which nobody saw coming.
Just so you know, we knew there was Windows Mobile 6.5 coming.
Yeah.
That part we knew. But what they were talking about is there might be two different versions of Windows Mobile supported over the long term. So like what DigiTimes was all excited about was Microsoft's not going to drop Windows Mobile 6.5 when 7 comes out. There's going to be two.
Yeah.
And one is going to be for capacitive touch screens like the iPhone. That's what Windows Mobile 7 is going to be. And 6.5 is going to be for people who don't have full multi-touch enabled phones.
Mm-hmm.
And they were horrified that there'd be two. And they were saying Microsoft's strategy is bifurcating, blah, 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 all this stuff. But to me, again, that wasn't what the real story was. The real story was 7 is really late.
So, MJ, one of the things that seems to be tasking Microsoft in particular is the iPhone, and they're trying to reach out to iPhone developers. That's quite a turnaround from about 2 years ago, a year ago, where Robbie Buck, the head of mobile, was saying how Microsoft had gained market share, and about 2 years ago, where Steve Ballmer was asked what he thought of the iPhone. And here he is on an interview. I believe this is CNBC. Let's just hear what he had to say about the iPhone and how confident he was of Microsoft's strategy on mobile at that time.
Steve, let me ask you about the iPhone and the Zune, if I may. The Zune was getting some traction, and Steve Jobs goes to Macworld, and he pulls out this iPhone. What was your first reaction when you saw that?
$500, fully subsidized with a plan? I said, that is the most expensive phone in the world, and it doesn't appeal to business customers because it doesn't have a keyboard, which makes it not a very good email machine. Now, it may sell very well or not. I, you know, we have our strategy. We've got great Windows Mobile devices in the market today. You can get a Motorola Q phone now for $99. It's a very capable machine. It'll do music. It'll do internet. It'll do email. It'll do instant messaging. So I kind of look at that and I say, well, I like our strategy. I like it a lot.
Oops.
Mike,
yeah. I think Microsoft's view of the entire mobile phone market has really changed in the past year. and if it hasn't, they really got to get on the stick there.
Get on the stick? What are you talking about? Is that some American phrase?
That is.
What does that mean?
It means get the lead out. Do you guys know that one?
We kind of get that one, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's funny is, yeah, remember, I remember just a year ago, everybody at Microsoft was saying, oh, yeah, the iPhone, yeah, it's not that big a deal. And people don't really want a total touch phone. Like, having some touch in a phone is cool. But now we see, of course, Microsoft's coming around to the reality, which is, yeah, people want multi-touch on their phone. And yeah, some people do want the keyboard too. And I think that's a strength actually Microsoft should exploit and not forget about the business users who do want that and not make touch the only thing that is the selling point of a mobile phone. And but at the same point, you can't just, you know, say, oh, well, Apple, it's not that interesting and it's not a big part of the market. I mean, that's to even be like saying that a year ago was bad, to say it now would be ridiculous.
But where and what is the strategy? Because I've been watching the tweets and I know people who are now being pulled into the mobile group over at Microsoft. Robbie Buck at the Financialist meeting tried to play out the fact Microsoft had learned its lesson for the last year, and he said, we're recruiting experts in the interface, in design, in hardware from across the company to work on Windows Mobile. He also said that the existing relationship with her phone companies basically hadn't worked, and Microsoft was going to try harder with the hardware boys. Now, Windows 6.5, Ballmer didn't mention it in that interview. Windows 7, Mobile 7.0, sorry, was supposed to be the next touch point. Now we're talking in an interim release of Windows Mobile 6.5. What is going on? Is there a strategy at play here, do you think? And what is it?
Yeah, you know, I think they do have a strategy. A year ago, they were starting to hint around that there was going to be an interim version. And this was after they had talked very freely and at length about Windows Mobile 7 when it used to be codenamed Photon. That was like a year and a half or 2 years ago that we thought Windows Mobile 7 was just around the corner. Then late last year, they started hinting around there was going to be something in between what we have now and Windows Mobile 7. And so they basically said late last year there's going to be a Windows Mobile 6.5, and they didn't say much more than that about it. But now we know it's about to launch. It's going to actually – the first Windows Mobile 6.5 phones are going to be out on October 6th. And, you know, it's here, and it's coming, and it supports touch, though not multi-touch. It has a slightly modified UI. It has a slightly updated version of Internet Explorer. But it's basically an interim stopgap step, and it's not something that a lot of people are going to get really excited about, in my view. The part that I think we really have to ask, what is Microsoft's strategy and do they have one, is when we start talking again about Windows Mobile 7. Because last I heard, Windows Mobile 7 code was supposed to go to the phone makers this fall, which means they could have had Windows Mobile 7 phones out in spring 2010. Okay, that already was pretty late, but now we're hearing reports that the phone makers aren't going to get code till spring 2010, which means you're not going to see, if that's true, you're not going to see Windows Mobile 7 phones on the market till fall or winter 2010. And that's supposedly what Microsoft has as its true iPhone competitor, with full multi-touch, gesture support, the whole nine yards. So if we're not going to see the first true iPhone competitor for Microsoft till the end of 2010, I have to say, are they getting their mobile strategy together, and is it really going to be fixed? Because it sure doesn't seem like they're doing anything any more timely than they've done in the past.
No. Also, I would question that there seems to be an attempt of sorts to reach out or to try and convert iPhone developers into building Windows mobile applications. Somebody in their group put out a white paper during the summer in August, actually touting the example of one particular developer, was it Gripwire.com, yep, who moved their application from iPhone to Windows Mobile 6.5. And you got to wonder if that's the kind of crowd they're trying to reach out to. Well, I think they're making a big mistake, because there's already enough Windows developers out there. They should be trying to get those guys from developing for the PC and get them looking at the mobile phone, because from my experience of iPhone developers is they're pretty cynical and scathing of the Microsoft architecture, and they just don't want to play with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you're seeing, this is my take, since it's hard to get Microsoft to talk about Windows Mobile at all. So we're kind of guessing again here, like we are with Office. But I think what they're trying to do is make sure they have the whole gamut of apps. Like, they have a really good Windows developer community out there, and I think they're kind of assuming, which they probably shouldn't, that these guys are going to develop some business-centric Windows Mobile apps for these new phones. But what they don't have is all the people who do the fun $2 apps on the iPhone, the 99-cent apps, the iFart. They don't have an equivalent for the Windows Mobile phone. And I think they know if they want to pretend or even actually make this real that the Windows Mobile platform is for everyone and not just for business users, they need to have those guys too.
Microsoft.
So they need to recruit them, right?
Yeah. Microsoft's about as cool as your dad's jumper when it comes to these kind of things. I mean, they might have the money, they might have the influence, but they're not cool and they're not first. And that's about where they are right now on this issue, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. And I think they know that, and I'll give them credit for knowing that. Like, they know they need to fix that. Mm. And I think the way they're thinking of fixing it is, well, let's find the guys who are most successful on the iPhone and see if we can entice them in some way to develop for the Windows Mobile platform. Now, some people call that bribery, and I saw a couple reports saying Microsoft bribes developers to develop for the Windows Mobile platform. I think they're doing something that makes a lot of sense, actually. And if they have to pay them to do it, which they're probably going to have to, because as you're saying, the iPhone crowd is pretty dedicated to Apple.
Yeah.
I don't think Microsoft cares if they have to pay them. And they're willing to pull out the stops and try to fix things. So they, in a way, they don't really have a choice here. They got to do that.
Money's no object at Microsoft. I mean, they're throwing plenty of money at Bing and cash back, so buying market share clearly doesn't be a problem for them right now.
Yep.
So let's go down to Texas. you know, the lawyers once again came into play. How many times has Microsoft been the subject, either in a litigant or a plaintiff in a patent case? You know, these are not new for Microsoft. What was unusual about the case in Texas was the color of the language that came out of it by the Microsoft attorneys. In case our listeners weren't familiar with the case, Microsoft was judged to have trampled over a patent belonging to a company called I4I in so-called custom XML, which very few people really understood. I know MJ, you did a good diagnostic on that. And as part, they were actually found to have violated the patent, I believe, in May. But the judge's ruling came through in August, and it was an injunction, which was the effect Microsoft can no longer ship Word, which of course has got huge implications for the Office business. So that's a $14 billion business now. Obviously, the lawyers are starting to use like dramatic languages, saying this would cause stopping the shipment to Word would cause irreparable harm. Also, it would cause major public disruption, which sounds a bit like Armageddon or Independence Day.
Riots! Riots in the streets!
we're locking down our apartment at home right now, anticipation of the coming Armageddon. So I'm not quite sure. I mean, we've seen these kind of things before. How often? I mean, let's take, for example, the recent TomTom case. People were like, my God, the fat patent, you know, Microsoft was throwing its weight around again, and suddenly the whole thing just disappeared. So what's your take on this, MJ? Should we be worried? Is this the end of the Word business as we know it and the end of the Office franchise, or is there more to it than that?
I think, as usual, when it's a Microsoft lawsuit, there's more to it than that. as you pointed out, Gavin, what a lot of people glossed over in this case was this is not every Word product just a blanket injunction against every Word product. It's Word products capable of opening XML, DocX, or DocM files when they contain custom XML. So the custom XML to me is the part everybody's been glossing over. And I kind of drilled into that, as you said, in one of my posts and looked at, like, what the heck is custom XML? And it was actually hard to find out what it was. But it's basically code that lets you write and develop and work with custom-defined schemas. Mm-hmm. And not every Word developer or document uses custom XML. Even more to the point, though, what I was digging around about, you know, so is this really going to be, like, really disruptive to Word and to Office 2010 and all this other stuff for Microsoft? And is it really going to put them back and hurt customers? I found out that Microsoft already has got a plan B in the works.
Oh, really?
They've already developed a patch that'll take custom XML out of Word.
Really?
And it's ready. It, like, all they have to do, if the judge decides that this is going to be upheld, all they have to do is take this patch, put it on Windows Update, and push it out to everyone, and it'll, when you apply the patch, it'll remove custom XML from Word.
There goes your problem, and there goes iFryer's case as well.
Exactly. And, you know, I can't get Microsoft to say on the record, hey, this isn't going to be a big deal, all we have to do is push out this patch, but I hear the patch already exists and it's ready and it's in the wings and ready to be loaded up on those servers if the Microsoft lawyers can't overturn this. So I guess I'm not feeling as dire about it. I'm sure Microsoft's not loving it, though, because they're going to be fined hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever the fine was. I forget what it was. It was
200 million or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a pretty big number.
That's nothing for them days.
That's true. That's true.
I know this is a trip back down the wormhole of history, but this kind of happened in the Lois case with Microsoft when Microsoft lost over some plugin to Internet Explorer that opened, I believe, it opened documents and dealt with media, and I believe they kicked out a workaround to that as well, and that was when Tim Berners-Lee was warning that if the Lois award stood, it would basically break the internet. And the whole thing was settled.
Wow, I don't remember that, but it sounds very, very similar.
I know. You just got to watch these companies long enough, and you see the way they work. But especially, you know, everyone gets very bothered about these things, and the lawyers make a lot of noise. I mean, Microsoft's now got, you know, amicus briefs filed from HP and Dell, which are carbon copies of each other. You know, they're designed to try and influence the judge in the case. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think this thing's already been settled. It's just a matter of just like shoving now. The actual fight is over.
I don't even think this is going to go to the judge in September. That's my guess. It's supposed to go to court, I think, on September 23rd. I'm betting either Microsoft will settle with i4i or something else is going to happen. Patch gets pushed out miraculously or something. Some other thing will make this not go to court again.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see.
Never say never, but this is a really good chance that'll be the case. So the man whose lap all this falls in, Steve Ballmer, chief executive. What kind of mood do you reckon he's in this as we move from August to September, MJ?
Well, I know we've talked about the Todd Bishop patented mood index that we like to use when we're talking about Steve Ballmer's moods, the many moods of Steve. Mm. And goes all the way from all business to monkey boy and chair throwing and everything in between. But I'd say right now, Gavin, I'd say Mr. Ballmer is in an all business mode. And the reason I would say that is we're about to enter a really, really busy launch period for Microsoft. They get a ton of products launching in the next 2 months. Consumer products, business products. We talked about a couple here. We talked about Windows Mobile 6.5. They get the Zune HD. They got Windows 7. They got Windows Server 2008 R2. Mm. They've got Sterling. They've got a whole bunch of products coming out in the next few months. And I think a lot of these are make or break products for Microsoft. And I think Ballmer needs to be very focused, and he's going to be at the launch of Windows 7 here in New York on October 22nd. And I think he's all business right now.
I think he is. And I think not many people are covering this, but I think long term, there's a kind of question over Ballmer's credibility. I mean, the buck obviously starts with him at the top, and certain businesses do look after themselves, Windows and Office. But there's been some serious missteps in the last few years. I mean, Internet Explorer, Search, MSN, you know, now we've got Bing, they're throwing vast amounts of money at that. And then also the Windows Mobile debacle. They could say either we didn't see this coming, we didn't see the iPhone, we didn't anticipate success. But I mean, they're a tech company, they're supposed to anticipate the future. So there's a lot of spending now to get back in the game. And I wonder, you know, I've seen this before at some microsystems, for example, with McNeely and Jonathan Schwartz and other tech companies. How long can the chief keep at the top when the bets aren't paying off?
I have a lot of readers write, I don't know if you do too, but I have a lot of readers write to me saying, you should be advocating for Steve Ballmer to be tossed and he needs to go. And, you know, the shareholders should be in an uproar because the stock price is stagnant and he's acting without any kind of responsibility. And, you know, what I always go back and say to them is, okay, so who do you think should be the CEO of Microsoft? Yeah. And I don't think there's an answer to that question. And I think that is very telling. Like, who will step up and be the CEO?
You would have, you've got about five group presidents, right, obviously VPs right now, but I would imagine they would look outside the company. But then who follows Steve Ballmer is very much a question of the direction Microsoft wants to go in. You know, do you want to be, do you want a Mark Hurd, very quiet, understated, or do you want a Larry Ellison, very bullish in the headlines? You know, do you want a mobile expert? Do you want an internet search expert? A lot of questions. It's not an easy sort of replacement to make, I don't think.
No, it's not. And if you do go inside and pick one of those five corporate presidents, I think there'll be people leaving who don't get picked, and then that's complete upheaval again inside the company, and they don't really need that right now.
Yeah. Well, MJ, that's the future Microsoft sorted out then.
They should call us more often and get
They should even appear on the show.
They do. Maybe one of these days we'll get one of them on.
Maybe, yeah. All right. Well, that was Market Byte. My name's Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And my name's Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog. And we're thankful that you listened to this episode of Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.